Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 360, recorded on January 5th, 2019. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. This show is sponsored by SimpliSafe Home Security. We'll talk more about them later on. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from Smile. How's it going, Jeff?
It's going awesome, and it's so great to get to chat with you. I feel like it's been way too long.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah.
So we're back for a bit anyway, and that's good. I'm excited about that. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
That was weird. I don't know what just happened there.
I don't know. It's fine. It's
I don't know, but hugs all around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, are we calling it Bendgate number two?
No.
I'm going to.
Let's not call it
I'm going
that.
To because it irritates you.
Let's not call it that. I don't want to call it that.
Why? Okay, so the issue...
We can call it a lot of other things.
Okay, so the issue is
I think gaslight is a more appropriate term.
I don't know if I agree with that either, but yeah.
So the iPads Pro are, some of them, maybe like three, but, you know, pictures and internet and stuff. Maybe more, probably more than three. Not a crazy number of them, but they've been coming...
Something is going on, let's say that.
They've been coming from the factory in a bent... state.
Configuration.
A not good, noticeably bent situation. And the trigger on that was, at least for me, Test Everything guy on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
That guy, you know, he...
It's Jerry Rig, right?
Jerry Rig Everything. Yeah, I like that guy. I mean, he's kind of insane. But... he was like, yeah, it looks like there's probably a weak point due to this magnetic or inductive charging port, the little window on the side. He's like, yeah, that might be a weak point. And so he goes to bend it, and sure enough, it bends right there. It, you know, fractures there.
Well, also, and there's no structural interior.
Right.
I mean, the back case is an empty box, right? Mm-hmm. An entirely empty box. There's no internal structural supports at all. And my theory why Apple did that is mainly so they could have a single cell large battery.
Oh.
Right.
That seems reasonable, yeah.
But then the problem is because the overall case is so thin, and you're right, you have that little charging window. So where that cutout is, I mean, you basically have a couple of millimeters of actual aluminum on each side.
Right.
Right. I mean, I haven't measured that, but I mean, you don't have much actual metal material at that point. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a few millimeters. So those two things together from just an engineering standpoint, of course, yeah, that's definitely structurally a weak point.
But, and
I mean, on his thing, of course, if you apply enough pressure to anything that's made out of aluminum, it's gonna freaking bend.
Right. Yeah. So
that's called physics, people.
Stupid.
Right, right, right. So, you know, that was interesting.
Gets into insanity at some point. This is the problem, right? It's not that there aren't potentially issues and maybe some things from an engineering standpoint that Apple could have done differently to make it structurally stronger. The debate then becomes what is acceptable in terms of how resistant to bending does it need to be, and is it not the way it's designed at a reasonable level? And that's where I start to get unsure.
Yeah. So like, obviously the biggest argument is this is a very premium product, and people are expecting a premium construction. That
right.
isn't going to easily
totally
bend.
With you.
And so there, I mean, the most ridiculous picture is attached to the MacRumors article that I'll be posting. MacRumors reader, Buren one or whatever. So he posted his out of the box, and that's a pretty significant bend. I'd be pretty upset about this, and I'm not entirely sure if he was able to get a swap on this, but a separate reader messaged Tim Cook.
Right. And got this is where it got
and got
bad.
Something back from Dan Riccio, who basically this guy was just expressing his concerns over the over the bending, and Riccio basically says the iPad, the current iPad, is under tighter scrutiny than all previous iPads, and so the flatness is up to 400 microns. Which is tighter than previous generations, so it's less than the width of
400 microns.
Yeah, 400 microns. Fewer than four sheets of paper at most. That's not what's shown in this picture.
Correct.
No, the picture, it's very.
This
very
is where we
bent.
This is where we have a problem. 400 microns, you're not going to see a physical bend. And but see, the problem is Riccio giving this response and stating this is what added fuel to the fire in my opinion. Or it seems like he's not understanding what the person in the email was asking about. Actually, that's probably more accurate to say. It makes Apple's response
look like a blow off.
Well, not look like a blow off, come off like they didn't pay attention to what was going on. It's like tone deaf. It's like, oh, yeah, well, because he responds and says, oh, there can be some bending in the manufacturing process due to high temperature and plastic and blah, blah, blah. Right. So he first starts off by saying, oh, yeah, the thing can bend.
Right.
Or have a bend in it. But then goes on to define that bend as up to 400 microns, which is not really a bend that anybody is going to notice. So then, of course, the press has a field day because basically Apple just admitted, oh, they can't have bends in them. But then they ignore the fact that he also quantified that bend at a place where it's like, no one's going to notice 400 microns. You're not going to physically feel like that thing is bent. And plus, it doesn't matter. And that was what Apple was trying to say, because he says, it can bend up to this much. That's the tolerance, and it's not going to get any worse. But no one heard that. All they heard was Apple just confirmed the thing bends.
Now, what could have helped that whole statement, I think, would have been if he wrapped it up by saying, now, if you're seeing more bend than that in your iPad, please bring it to your Apple store so we can take care of this.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and this is where the bigger problem in my mind comes into play. And this is where Apple's constant not wanting to publicly address issues like this, it becomes a problem. They have a huge problem with this issue. And I do not doubt that there is models with all the pictures we've been seeing, including this one on MacRumors and other places and the other sources that are citing issues, this issue. This is a problem with some units. And it doesn't even matter how many units at this point in my mind. What matters is that Apple's handling of this at Apple retail stores, from what we're hearing from people who are going in, is their blanket answer is, you have bent it, it is your fault, and we are not replacing it, and you have to pay out of warranty. And
ouch.
Really?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Across the board. And when you have people like Michael Gartenberg saying, I have a bent iPad, I just returned it, and this is unacceptable, a former VP of Apple marketing saying that Apple has a problem,
That's
a problem.
Bad sign.
That might be a problem.
This is a problem. At the very least, it's a PR problem. And if it is isolated, Apple should just swap them out. It should just be like, fine, here's a new one. Like, there should be no questions asked on any of this.
Yeah.
But that is not what's happening. And there's multiple incidences that you're hearing about. Now, the positive side of this is I have been talking about this on my show for months now. And I've asked people specifically, anybody in my community, which is, you know, and not to sound,
that's pretty big.
You have a big, you know, community, like a braggart or something like that, but it's a large community. I would hear from people if this was a widespread issue, and I have heard from zero people
who
have had this issue.
Well, to add to your anecdotal evidence, I got my iPad Pro on day one, and I pulled out a straight edge after everyone started flipping out about the bending, and there is no bend in my iPad.
Yeah, and I've had mine since day one as well, and it's perfectly flat and straight. Do you have a Pro or a 12.9 or an 11?
12.9.
Okay, so you do have the larger one, because supposedly this is a bigger issue for the larger iPad. I have the 11-inch, and I have not had problems. So again, I don't think this is a widespread issue, which is why it's so bizarre with how Apple is handling this, because I think this is a very small percentage, and it's probably related to something like it's one batch or one manufacturing plant, or like it does not seem widespread. And
I no doubt
that some of the ones coming in might be user damage, which I think this is what Apple's concerned about at retail, right? It's like people are going to squash them or mistreat them, and then they will bend, which can happen because, again, it does have structurally, I think, the capability to bend, which is what the jerry rig thing proved, right? It's like you apply enough force, so you put this in your bag, and yeah, I've seen people's computer bags. Some people have massive amounts of stuff on it. So I would imagine if you have a big, heavy computer bag, your iPad's on one side, and you set it down in a certain situation, you probably could bend it.
Mm-hmm.
Like with enough weight and force being applied to it, it probably might start to develop a bend, especially over time. Like if you're constantly setting 50 pounds on top of it over and over again, it might bend in a month or two.
Sure. But still, I think it would be in Apple's best interest to have handled this.
Correct.
In a different way. You come in with a warped iPad Pro, new model.
Right.
And we're still relatively early in the product release phase.
Correct.
And most of the people that are coming in that have that warped iPad, it's because it's just warped.
Correct.
There will be a very small percentage where they bent it themselves. Give all of them a new iPad and thank them for being good customers.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what they should be doing. So this is where the screw up is. I don't think there's an inherent problem with the iPad. I mean, there is. They should have probably went with a better interior structure, and I almost guarantee you the next version of the iPad will see a multi-cell battery with some interior structural material.
Yeah, I feel like that was kind of a bad move. But,
but that's how Apple handles these things. Look at what they did with the keyboard, right? I mean, look what they did. The iPhone, when it had bends, they did slightly change the design in later versions, and they just don't say anything about it. That's Apple's way of handling these things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They will. I mean, there will be some structural differences in the next version, I almost guarantee you, to account for this. But again, I don't think the current version has a widespread problem, and where they've screwed up is with how they've been handling it. It literally should just be exactly the way Jeff described.
Yeah, the number of people that are going to come in having bent their iPad is so small that it's not worth the bad PR.
Totally. And that's where they're screwing up, in my opinion. That's the only place they're screwing up with this, with how they're handling this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's basically like you're holding it wrong all over again. Right? I mean, that's the response.
Yeah, your opinion is wrong.
Yeah. And again, a lot of these people, I don't think, are being dishonest or just you know, not genuine. The number of people that will take advantage of it, I think, is very, very small.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And again, they paid for a premium product. It's not the cost to Apple to handle it in a way where they come off looking like the good guys is so minuscule.
Yeah, that's what they really
need. Why they're not doing that.
That's what they really need to do. And they, you know, they, I feel like in some ways they kind of forget that they're, you know, a premium brand where they're bringing in way more money for these things than at other places. Right. And that's the kind of treatment you expect. And usually Apple comes through. And in my experience, they usually do. But yeah, that was poorly handled. The one thing, did we mention that this was due to a weird manufacturing process that can be a result of cooling, we're thinking? So it's not something...
Say that again?
It's not some sort of like mishandling, as far as we know, in the manufacturing process. We think that it's due to a cooling thing as part of the process.
That was stated by I think the visible bends that you're seeing is got to be something happening. They had to have come out of the factory like that.
No,
like,
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think it's happening, and I don't think it's happening in shipping.
No,
I think it's. I think these are getting through. You know, Apple doesn't QA every single thing coming off the assembly line. I think they probably came. The component part probably came bent for some reason, and they just got manufactured that way. And I think it's a small batch. It's probably coming out of one location or even one batch that just got screwed up in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
How they became bent, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, Apple in testing, I'm sure they had this 400 micron tolerance, and I'm sure they're checking, you know, every thousandth unit, or I don't know how many units they check, but you know, they're checking at a certain level. Yeah. So you know, there could be 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000. I don't know, you know, internally what those QA checks are, but obviously they've had a number of them slip through QA and show up in consumers. I mean, people are reporting pulling them out of the box with a visible bend, and I don't think they're lying.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Okay,
but Apple's treating them that way. They're treating them like they're full of crap, and they're lying, and it's just bad. It just looks bad across the board, and that's the frustrating part to me on this whole issue, because they could be handling it so much better, and it would be a non-issue. I wish I could come out and report to people, yes, you know, they've noted that some units can have a problem, and they'll just swap them out for you. So don't worry about it, people. If you buy one, just take it back. They'll take care of you. But I can't tell people that right now, because the response that, and I've heard from multiple people, you know, online and through various, again, and trustworthy people like Michael Gartenberg. You know, I don't think Michael Gartenberg, former VP at Apple, is lying when he says, I had a bent iPad and I took it back and just, you know, just took it back. I'm getting a different device because this one sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think he's lying.
And that's bad PR. And had they just given him a new one, made sure it was straight before he left the store.
Yeah. I don't even know if he asked for a new one. I think he was just sort of fed up with the whole way Apple was handling things.
Oh,
he didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
I think that was his statement, his way of saying, look, this is an issue and I believe everybody, and you know, I'm just not going to deal with it. It's not the Apple that I want to deal with, and I think it's reasonable for people to feel that way. Like, you know, yeah, I never play the Steve Jobs card, and I won't hear either. I don't think this is a matter of who's running the ship or anything. It's just, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know why Apple's not paying better attention to this and handling it in a better way. I'm baffled by it.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Okay, let's move on to the, it seems like we may be getting a battery case for the iPhone XS and XR and XS Max. And so we've seen a few different bits of evidence. We saw a fall 2018 merchandising guide for Apple resellers that had pictures of leather battery cases for the XS and XS Max.
Camel cases, I'm assuming?
Yes, 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 yes. Camel cases. We saw there was a Reddit user who cut up his old battery case to fit
his iPhone 7 case. That's my favorite photo of an iPhone 7 case ever.
Yeah, and so he slapped that on his XS, and it shows up as a the icon says, you know, it's a smart battery case, but the icon is clearly a XS, or you know, 10 style phone. So it seems like it's coming, I guess.
Those cases plug into the Lightning connector, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would the presumably the new ones be wireless, or are they going to still plug in for faster charging?
Probably plug in. I would assume
plug in.
Yeah, so then you have pass-through, right?
Oh, it does have a pass-through port on it.
And then you lose less, or you waste less. Wow. You waste less energy. There we go.
Yeah.
Right.
Going through the port as opposed to doing inductive charging.
I never had an Apple case, so I didn't know it had a pass-through port, but that makes sense.
Yep.
What do we think of Apple's case? Because I know people who absolutely love that thing. And I think I read that the fact that it has a bump, there's actually a design reason for it. I want to say it was thermal related, but I might be wrong on that.
I don't know about that. I know that it allows you to take it off and put it on easily. Right, because it bends at that joint.
Oh,
at that transition point.
Ones bend like that too?
I assume they'd have to. I don't know how else you'd, because you have to slide it up, right? So, but yeah, so that's interesting. I haven't needed that sort of situation for my. I have an iPhone 7. You know what? I didn't end up getting the battery replacement thing, the $30. I realized a few days before Christmas, I was like, oh yeah, I should totally schedule an appointment, and I just didn't care because my iPhone's basically the entire year been at 89% capacity, and I just hadn't really 89% capacity. I haven't been getting amazingly awesome battery life every day, but it tends to get me through the day for the most part.
I never had a problem with in years. I can go almost 2 days mostly with any iPhone I've had over the past couple of years.
Well, I have an iPhone 7.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So you need it.
No, I don't I don't think that would make a big difference. It's a 10% capacity difference.
Yeah, I don't know why. So you will get to the end of the day and be almost out of power.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I haven't had that problem.
Should have done the battery.
I don't think that would really change it. I never had a, 2 day battery life on the iPhone 7.
Yeah, but you should have a comfortable 1 day battery life at least.
I don't know how heavy
it is. Comfortable. It doesn't. What I'm saying is, it doesn't bother me. It is comfortable. I do have a comfortable margin at the end of the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, great talk, bro.
Yeah. With wireless charging and stuff now too, though, I do have to admit, I've started to just populate little wireless chargers in all the areas where I hang out. So one on my desk, one on my nightstand.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have one in the living room yet, but my car has a wireless charger in it too, so it's entirely possible at this point I'm not even noticing what my battery life is because I'm always plunking it down on a charger probably.
Yeah, true.
But I mean, even on days when I'm not at home, when I'm out for a full day or something like that, I seem to feel like I get home and I'm at least 40%, 30% left. Even on those days where it's I haven't even got it near a charger, maybe even 50%. I have to pay more attention probably though. You're right, Michael. And to a certain degree, it's kind of become a non-issue battery stuff. The only thing I'm having trouble with battery life on now is my AirPods, but those are 2 years old, but it feels like they should be doing better. But I seem to be chugging through battery life on those now pretty quick.
Yeah, I've noticed. I noticed on my plane trip that it seemed my AirPods seemed a little less than stellar.
Yeah.
You know, I'm concerned my right AirPod is going to wear out long before my left AirPod, at least the battery.
I have that same problem too. Yeah, they seem to be uneven.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Do you use it?
And it doesn't help that when I drive, I have just one in.
Oh, I never do that. So maybe that's related. But I generally sure. always use both. And I've noticed that my right one, I think the battery drains quicker.
Yeah, I've talked to a couple other people who said one of their AirPods drains faster than the other.
Huh.
I also have occasionally had weird connectivity issues with mine. But I have always attributed that to solar flares.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. I had to replace
no,
my...
No, I'm serious. I'm not joking. Because it happens very intermittently and then just on certain days. Like I had one day the other day where I was on my morning walk and I do a couple laps around the block and it was specifically at two locations where it would just knock out. And it was always within probably, 10, 20 yards of that location.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just get knocked out. The Bluetooth would just...
Interesting.
And just on that day or a couple days, and then it was fine after that. So I call it solar flares. I don't know. Or one of my neighbors is running like a weird, super strong microwave or something. I don't know.
You have a neighbor who's testing a flux capacitor.
Exactly.
I was going to say grow light, but sure.
Maybe that too.
There is
the meth house near here.
Yeah, it's probably the meth house, honestly. The one thing that I had with my AirPods, I think last year, the right AirPod, the microphone just kind of stopped working on it. But it was within warranty, so I just brought it in. They're like, oh yeah, here you go. Here's a different one. The left one now has crapped out. Have you guys heard of or seen that?
No.
Or one dies and then the other?
Well, just that a microphone will die.
No.
That's annoying.
Yeah. I am honestly starting to question the longevity of the AirPods. Because again, mine, it feels like the battery is not lasting after about 2 years. And for a $170 set of headphones, you would hope that they would last longer than 2 years. And I don't even know, like if I brought them in, I don't think Apple swaps the battery, right? They just sell me new.
They swap the whole unit.
Right. And it's $70 a bud.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I believe that's right.
So it's still going to cost me $140 to replace both of them, which is almost the price of a new set of AirPods.
Yeah. Yeah, I
need to do more hardcore testing. This is right. What I'm saying here now is all just perception. It's not, I have not like validated it in any way. I want to be clear about that to people.
Yeah, I need to, I think that the size of the AirPods kind of just means that it's going to, be a limited lifetime kind of product.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so what's reasonable, I guess, is what I'm starting to question is like, what would be reasonable to expect for battery, for longevity of a set of, and from anybody, not just Apple, we could be talking about the Jaybirds, like how long would you expect them battery life wise to last for, spending the amount of money you spend on them up front?
I'd say, I don't know, maybe like 3 years.
Yeah, that feels about right to me too.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and my battery has been pretty good. It's just been the weird microphone thing.
Well, that's exactly it though. I mean, that's the point. And I'm trying to bring up is like when I first got them flawless the first year, no problems, probably halfway through the second year, no problems.
Yeah.
Had been at the beginning, if that makes sense.
Okay, let's move on to other stuff because there's some fun stuff to talk about. But first, we have to talk about our sponsor, which is SimpliSafe. We all put off doing things that we know we need to do. For example, you need to organize the garage, but something always gets in the way. Funny how home security can be like that. It's a good idea, but there's always something holding you back. Well, now is the time to act because SimpliSafe Home Security's extended holiday sale ends soon. SimpliSafe believes nothing should come between you and protecting your home. That's why they've gotten rid of the reasons not to get home security. There's no contract ever. No price markups from any middleman, and no installation windows. Most importantly, their system is engineered to do one thing brilliantly: protect. So if a storm takes out your power, SimpliSafe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone line, SimpliSafe is ready. If they destroy your keypad or siren, SimpliSafe will get you the help you need. Maybe overkill, maybe it's the last thing you want to think about this holiday, but with SimpliSafe, you're always ready for anything. Just go to simplisafe.com/tyos and order before January 8th to save with their extended holiday sale. That's simplisafe.com/TIOSS. SimpliSafe.com/tyos. And we thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. All right, with that, let us talk about everybody's favorite topic, which is Apple's lowered revenue guidance for Q1 2019.
No, my 401k program doesn't like that this topic at all.
Bet.
It doesn't? That's weird. Yeah, so Apple's stock dropped about 10%, pretty close to, after this happened. So basically, Tim Cook said, what day did this happen? A couple days ago. The second, I believe.
Like recently, yeah.
He said that they're expecting a revenue of approximately $84 billion, which is down from their $89 to $93 billion projection. And their gross margin is, I guess, about the same. But yeah, so the revenue is down quite a bit. And Tim Cook is citing mainly poor sales in China, right? But then they also said there was a strong U.S. dollar, supply constraints, economic weakness, in China, trade tensions with China, lower than anticipated iPhone revenue, again in China, weak iPhone. This one's dumb. Weak iPhone upgrade numbers due to fewer carrier subsidies. Now that one, maybe fewer carrier subsidies, but the lower priced battery replacement thing. I'm like, really, dude, you're going to bring that up? You think that's a cause for this? I don't buy that.
I can buy it.
I don't buy it.
I think there's a lot of people that, when they realized for $29 they can put a new battery in their phone and keep using it, decided they would rather do that than buy a new iPhone.
Yes, I agree with you.
I don't think philosophy. It's enough to significantly impact Apple's bottom line.
No, I don't think so.
You know, it's interesting because I started when all this news started coming out. You know, we've been hearing rumors for months now that iPhone sales are way down, that Apple's cutting back on orders and supply chain. All of this sort of evidence, quote unquote evidence that wasn't confirmed. But when I saw this report come out, it kind of said to me, well, there's some fire behind some of this smoke at the very least, right?
Yeah.
And Apple seems to be blaming the bulk of it on China and that sort of stuff. I don't know that I kind of feel that's 100% genuine. I think it's easy to use that as the scapegoat. Again, because this is financial stuff, they can't be out and outright lying. But I think that it's not so much carrier subsidies. I think it's symptomatic of probably some good things. One, that people have older iPhones that they're super happy with, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you're right in that standpoint, Jeff. I think people go, oh, I have an iPhone 7, I can get a new battery. Battery's my only issue. Everything else on this phone works fine. I'm going to stick with this and save myself some money. But I definitely think coupled behind that is the fact that the price increases have made people also feel like they don't need to upgrade. Like that has been enough to push people who are maybe on the edge thinking, I might want to get a new iPhone now. And then they see the new cost and the price points, and they go, you know, there's not enough new stuff in there. I'm not going to get enough technological advantage out of what Apple is offering to really justify how much it's going to cost me. And that does translate into what Tim Cook was talking about, though. The carrier's not offering enough promotional subsidies. And so then what happens right now? Apple is heavily marketing and increasing buyback offers. They are doing things that I've never seen them do before to try and entice people to buy a new iPhone and to get them to upgrade. So there's definitely something going on here, and I definitely think sales are way below where Apple was thinking they were going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think they were caught off guard by it, and I think their reaction has become to try and incentivize people in ways we've never seen them incentivize people before. So I even heard from a bunch of people in my audience this week that took advantage. They finally did upgrade. They weren't going to upgrade. They had an iPhone 7, and when Apple started giving like $100 more on the trade-in, they went, okay, I'm going to do it. And a lot of those folks that I've heard from are actually going either with an iPhone 8 or an iPhone 10R. Like, they're not going for the higher price point ones, but they're getting, you know, a 10R. I think you can get the entry-level 10R now from Apple on a trade-in for like $450, something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the price point that people want to be at. And so I think Apple has pushed the market right to the edge of where it's willing to go. And I think they found the line. And the line is, you know, $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think $1,000 is too far. Especially
That's what I mean. They went over the line. So I think people are willing to go up to $800. At 1,000, yeah. I think they really start to question the purchase, and that's what they're seeing. That's the reaction they're seeing. They're seeing people go, "My iPhone 7 is fine. $1,000, you know, $1,100 is too much. I might be willing to pay $800, but at $800, I want the top of the line. I don't want last year's old model."
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And so I'm just going to stick with what I have for another year and save my money, and then maybe I'll upgrade next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So how much of this then is a wider market thing where cell phones are just so good all the way around, regardless of the manufacturer, that the cell phone market is kind of flattening out right now? People don't see the need to upgrade.
We are definitely
100% that.
Definitely at peak phone for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, in combination with that, Apple's, you know, pressing to $1,000, ended them in this situation. And I think it's only going to get worse unless they start responding appropriately to it.
Well, I think they were hoping, again, so there's a little bit in Tim Cook's statement too. I think they were hoping that the carriers would make up the slack and eat it. And I think what they found was that the carriers are like, no way.
Yeah, no kidding. Why? Right? Why would they do that? That's not
because
their
they
problem.
Have in the past. I mean, carriers have always incentivized people to get those latest model phones, right?
Yeah.
And I think again, I think that peak level, I think even the carriers are like, no, this has gotten ridiculous. Like, we're not going to do a $200, $300 subsidy on an iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and then you end up with situations like me, the iPhone guy with an iPhone 7, and I'm just like, I don't care. I don't need the new phone. The iPhone 7 works great. You know?
Honestly, I think if you have anything newer than a 7, there is not a lot of incentive in the new models to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, there's nice features. That's not to knock what the iPhone has. Like, I really like and enjoy the adaptive, oh, man, why can't I remember? It's called, Apple calls it Bokeh, but it's not Bokeh really. The adaptive focus stuff on the new iPhone XS. It's really fun and great. But is it a $200, $300 feature? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
like, I could.
For what it's worth, you can get from T-Mobile, I'm looking at it, for $250, you know, and then they, you know, subsidize it over they let you pay for it over 36 months. Right. You know, $20 a month. That's not bad.
That's an interest-free loan. That's pretty awesome.
That's not bad.
Well, and so does, I mean, so does Apple. I mean, that's the program I'm on too. But I mean, what does that say to you right there? You're supposed to have that phone for 3 years.
Yeah, true. True.
Right?
True.
So you're supposed to buy into that and then not upgrade for 3 years. Of course, they're going to incentivize you to do a trade-in and upgrade after a year or whatever, which you're welcome to do. And they just keep you on a payment plan for indefinitely.
Forever.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see this year when the phones come back around, you know, are they going to, is that going to continue to work? I have a feeling we're going to start to see the monthly payment prices go up because I think the values on the trade-ins and stuff like that are going to go down because people aren't upgrading. Like, there's going to be too much saturation of old phones already in the market that people aren't willing to sort of buy into.
Interesting.
I don't know. You know, it seems unsustainable in the long term. And I think at some point people on payment plans might even get caught off guard because you might show up to trade in your phone and there might be like a service fee or an upgrade fee to make up the difference between the trade in value of the old phone and the high rising cost of the new phone.
Sort of like what happened this year for a lot of iPhone X owners. That's why I didn't move on to that XS. It's because this was the year that AT&T said, no, yeah, we're done letting you upgrade early. And they wanted to have, I don't know, it was like $400 before I could upgrade to the new phone. And I thought, you know, why don't I just not upgrade? And then in a few more months, I just own the phone outright and do with it as I please.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So I mean, my plan is to just pay off my loan before I even get to the upgrade part. So.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if I'll want a new phone this year, to be honest. I mean, I didn't really necessarily want the XS. I mostly did it for the podcast so I could talk about some of the new features, and I may continue to do that because it makes sense from that level. But for anybody who's just personal use, like if you have an 8 or a 10, what does the XS or XS Plus really deliver for you that you're missing out on in a big way? Unless you're a super I care about every camera feature person, or I don't know what else, maybe battery life. Certainly faster processor is nice, but that's not something you're going to notice on a daily basis. So,
So we've got a couple, class action lawsuits due to the guidance situation. One firm is talking about, so in Q4 2018, Tim Cook said our business in China is very strong or was very strong last quarter. They grew 16%, which they're very happy with. iPhone in particular was very strong double digit growth there. But in 2019, this, you know, last couple of days, he revised that guidance saying lower than anticipated iPhone revenue, primarily in greater China, which accounts for all of our revenue shortfall to our guidance, and for much more than our entire year-over-year revenue decline. And so there's two actual class action lawsuits over this. What do you think about that? And we talked about it to some extent that, you know, Apple assumed that, you know, the ball would keep rolling on this thing. I guess a lawsuit implies that there's some sort of that they knowingly misguided people, but I think they misguided themselves.
I think it's going to be really hard to prove that Apple was intentionally misguiding investors.
Yeah.
And that would be really stupid for Apple to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as long as they did an out and out lie, I mean, and I don't think they did. I don't think they're gonna have a problem.
Right.
I mean, that's what they're basically gonna have to prove, that Apple completely misrepresented you know, using those statements, misrepresented themselves, and I don't think they did.
Yeah, I don't think they did. And I think this is just another case of us living in a lawsuit happy culture.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
Okay, so was there anything else? Tim Cook had an all hands meeting with Apple. So Mark Gurman thinks that Apple needs to look beyond the iPhone. They're relying on it as their core product. That they, you know, and then they can't lean on AirPods or Apple Watch because it's kind of an iPhone related product.
So what's up with Gurman saying that? Because if he really thinks Apple is sitting back and just relying on iPhone, he's been smoking something.
Yeah, that's
Apple
true
is too. Always working towards the future.
Yeah, I think the bigger question, and where he's somewhat right, is when are we going to see that future? And it's starting to feel like that future might be too far away from where iPhone is. Mm-hmm. So we're at a point where I think the next couple of years, Apple might be in a little bit of trouble. And this happens all the time. This is nothing new. You know, we've seen these periods before, and they, you know, knock on wood, they have this history of being able to recover from those. But I think, you know, the stock price going down, I don't think it's going to get any better in 2019, to be honest. I don't see them bringing out a product, and that's where the concern is, right? Where is that product? It's probably not a 2019 product. Is it a 2020 product? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Apple's notoriously secret, so we don't know what they have going on, and we don't know what their time frame is for the product or products that we don't know about.
There's really three options, right? Or two to three options, right? It's the car thing or the autonomous vehicle system thing, which isn't, in my mind, even a consumer product, which is interesting. So I don't even know how that pans out. Or it's some sort of AR, VR sort of thing, right? I mean, what else would they possibly be working on?
There could be something else in services.
Second,
the movie service.
The TV.
So that's the third. That's definitely the third one, and that's probably the one that's closest to being a. I mean, that one is the one we will probably see in 2019. Is it enough to offset?
No.
iPhone.
No.
It potentially could be if what we've been hearing rumor wise is true about it. It has potential. I mean, they've got some amazing content coming, and if they're delivering that, here's where I get concerned, because the rumor is they're delivering that free to all existing Apple product owners, right? And it's supposed to leverage premium services on top of it, where the revenue stream is going to come from. But historically, Apple has shown that they're not very good at getting that revenue, as evidenced by Netflix killing the in-app subscriptions this past month.
Yeah. How is that cool? How are they able to get away with that? That shouldn't. I feel like that screws up the user experience.
It does. It totally does.
Okay, so if you were already doing the subscription purchase in the Netflix app on your iOS device, you get to continue doing that. This is for new users.
Sure. Okay.
New subscriptions.
And if you cancel and try to come back, you can't stay on it either.
Right. So, I mean, it's sucky, but at the same time, has this really impacted Amazon Prime movie books and comic book sales?
Well,
because they did the same thing. And
this is the problem for Apple, though.
Yeah.
This is the problem for Apple and services, and especially given what we've been hearing, that they're sort of movie, you're in the, either their TV app, Apple video service model is supposed to be based on the fact that people are going to get things like HBO and Showtime and Stars and all this other stuff through the TV app. And I'm assuming that's a rev share thing related to the subscription service. No? I mean, how else is Apple getting money from those premium services if that's what the plan is for the video service? And if the video service is going to be the thing that's going to get them through the next couple of years before, you know, so they can get to the next big thing that's going to replace iPhone, that's where the big question in my mind is. And so I'm curious to see what they do in 2019. If they're not going to charge flat out for the video service, if it really is, hey, you have an iPhone, which I think is a great, great model. If you own an iPhone, an iPad, an Apple TV, a Mac, we're going to give you some great free video content, and then we're going to upsell you on these other services. You know, I don't know if Apple's planning on giving kickbacks, but I assumed the way the revenue model was going to work was they were going to build it into the, you know, into the 30% that they get, or 15% really from most of the video services on doing in-app subscriptions to those services. It's very much the model that Amazon uses right now, right? With Amazon Prime Video. Prime Video is free to Prime subscribers, but if I want to watch HBO or Showtime shows or some other premium shows through there, I buy those services through the Amazon Prime thing and get them that way.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you get upsold. And that supposedly is what Apple's video service is supposed to be. But if they can't keep the companies around to do that, and if those companies go, well, I don't see the advantage. Now, the advantage I think Apple's going to try and sell them on by doing the free service is the billions and billions of now eyeballs and the marketing opportunity. But there's also the elephant in the room, which is the privacy thing, where Apple doesn't want to share customer or consumer data with those companies either.
True.
And those companies generally want that information.
Right, right. That's going to be a tricky needle to thread.
But again, as far as products go, to get them past peak iPhone and to the next thing, they need something in the pipeline. And the only thing that I've heard about in the pipeline at this point is that video service.
Right. But
that's ready to roll in 2019.
You really think
there's
the TV
other stuff, obviously, but I don't think it's ready for 2019 release.
I don't think TV is enough to, I don't know. It'll be great. I think it'll help a lot, but I guess there've been rumblings and rumors of the TV service for years now. Mm-hmm. So you'd think they're working on this thing in earnest and really trying to knock it out of the park.
Yeah, I don't know. What happens if they don't? I mean, again,
if they don't, we got another ping on our hands.
Oh, that would be horrible. I don't think we have another ping on our hands.
No, I think the video service is going to be massive just based on the content that they've signed up and they're working on. I mean, the quality level of the kinds of people from Hollywood they're getting to work on this stuff, and the producers and the showrunners and the writers, and like, it has all the signs of being really good, high quality video content. So I don't think they're going to have trouble getting eyeballs. I don't think they're going to have trouble getting people to watch the stuff. I have a feeling a few of the shows are going to be highly critically received and acclaimed, not all of them. Right. And
sure.
But
right. Netflix.
Exactly. Just like Amazon and Netflix. So I think that has been smart on their part. I think if they make it free, they're going to have a huge audience very, very quickly.
Right.
The question becomes, how do they make money from that?
Yeah.
You know, I think their whole TV movie business is in a way tipping their hand at where they're going for revenue in the future, meaning that instead of relying on a single product as the primary revenue source for the company, they're looking to have a more diverse revenue stream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think maybe this service is just primarily to entice new users?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's exactly what it's all about. It's about getting more people using the TV app. Because I will tell you, as a TV app user, I am addicted to that thing. And it is my way preferred way of consuming my entertainment content. Now, my family hasn't converted over yet, and they don't understand it. But I think once you start using it and you get locked into that ecosystem, it's like, I hate going to the HBO app, or hate having to go to the Amazon app, or even now the Hulu app, now that I have Hulu.
Uh-huh.
Like, those experiences suck.
They do. Yeah. I had to explain.
I had to explain
over Christmas to my cousin and to my mother what are you doing with these third-party apps? Put them in a folder, stop going to them, and use the TV app. You're using your Apple TV wrong. You're going to have so much, you're going to like this so much more if you just use the TV app. And they didn't really get it.
Yeah, which is why the biggest problem Apple has with the TV app right now, in my opinion, is not having Netflix on board.
Oh my God, yes.
They need to be doing everything in their power. I don't care if they have to pay Netflix off. You know, whatever they need to do, like send their own developers and offer to build the app themselves for Amazon. You know, like, I don't care.
What is the issue with, what does Netflix not do with the TV app?
The only thing the that they allow into the TV app are
critical part.
Yeah. The only stuff you can get, it's old library. So none of their original content. Yeah.
You have to search for it. You can't put it into Up Next. And you might be able to, and once you've searched for it, you might be able to add it to Up Next, but it doesn't come in naturally as recommendations.
Yeah, but not any of their original content. It's just blocked.
And it won't show you the stuff you're currently playing in Up Next either, I don't think.
Okay, so yeah, that's no good.
Yeah, no bueno. And the only thing I can think of for Netflix maybe not doing it is because it doesn't support multi-user, and that is another thing that Apple needs to fix in the TV app. They need to have multiple user support so that I don't see what my kids are, you know, so my kids' stuff isn't influencing what they're watching, isn't influencing my stuff, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Like, I'd love to see Apple get a multi-user Apple TV experience in 2019.
That's a bit of a pain.
It's a pain, but these are the kinds of things, if what they're banking on is that TV app and the TV services in 2019 to get them through this year from a revenue perspective so that they can get to the next things that they're working on, right? Because we are at peak iPhone. iPhone's flat. That is not, those numbers are not going up, people. That's
no.
Done.
No, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing on the Mac side. And it's not that they don't have exciting products and things that we'll want to buy. I'm not saying that. I'm saying people are not upgrading their iPhones as frequently. They're not upgrading their Macs as frequently. They are buying Apple Music services. You are seeing people buy into iCloud services, which have gotten a lot better. And I think the TV thing is going to be huge. But beyond that, you know, they have to be able to generate revenue out of it. And if they want to generate revenue out of it, they have to add features that are going to be important to people. And I guarantee you, when the video service launches, people are going to want number one on their list, or at least top three on their list, is going to be multi-user support. Because people have families. We don't watch, you know, a lot of people don't watch by themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And in families, not everybody likes the same content.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting. So we think this TV service is coming out this year?
I think so.
It's supposed to be, there's going to be an announcement in the first quarter, I bet.
Okay. Well, I'm
probably
looking forward to it.
April, May timeframe, I'm guessing.
Okay. So let's move on. Here's something interesting. So one analyst, Forbes, Jean-Baptiste Sue, believes that the next iPhone will have a USB-C port, a smaller notch, and Touch ID under the display. I don't know about that one.
We've been hearing punch hole.
Oh yeah. Really?
Yeah. I'm just not buying the punch hole. As much as people don't like the notch, I think the punch hole looks really weird.
Yeah.
I may be an outlier, and I may be kind of crazy.
You are willing to accept that. You are both of those things. That's true.
Yep. I'd rather have the notch than a hole punch.
I think none of it matters, to be honest. It, meaning that I don't think punch hole, notch, whatever, it's not a big deal. Like, I don't notice the notch on a day-to-day usage basis. And if I had a punch hole, I don't think I would really notice that. You know, if it's not interfering with the UI elements and they're going to design it in a way where it won't, then who the frick cares?
Yeah, this is true. but it would be nice to obviously reduce it. You get more screen that way. So it's not something that people are saying, oh, right. I'm not going to get the phone because it has a notch.
Right.
But if you can make it smaller, that's a selling point. You know, it, yeah. Overall, you've increased the screen size with the notch. You just happen to have a notch.
Well, you could have made the phone a couple centimeters taller, too, and just put it in a thin bezel.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have never encountered anyone that said that they refused to buy an iPhone because of the notch.
Right.
That it's always, well, I refuse to buy the iPhone because I don't like Apple, or because mm-hmm. I want a more open platform, or I don't like the Apple's App Store, I want Google's App Store.
Yep. It's always about the ecosystem and what you can do with the device. It's never about, and price point. I mean, again, that's another huge knock on Apple is
the price point is,
again,
exorbitant.
I don't see that as a problem because Apple's always been a premium brand. They're not interested in the lower end of the market, and that's fine. That's their prerogative as a company.
Yeah.
Yep. But you're right, Jeff. I mean, it's always about the ecosystem when people aren't buying it, why they are not buying an iPhone. It's very rarely about the design of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
More often you hear, I buy Apple because of the design of the thing, though. The opposite is true.
Yeah. Yep.
So what do you think about the Touch ID into the display, though?
No.
I don't think
Apple
so.
Apple has made it very clear that they never wanted Touch ID in the first place.
Really?
My brother-in-law has one of the new... is it the OnePlus that has that feature?
Oh, yeah.
And you're still... It puts a little icon in the area of the screen you have to touch, so...
Right.
Big deal.
Well, what do you mean, big deal? Does it work?
It worked. Okay. Sure. Well, I don't know how secure it is.
Cool. No, that's good. I like Touch ID. I feel like Face ID is a little still kind of wonky.
I think the stuff that OnePlus is doing in the screen, though, I don't think is as secure as Touch ID. But again, I'm probably just talking out of my butt because mm-hmm. I haven't looked into it. But I believe that's the case or the knock on it.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I do think USB-C is probably coming for the iPhone this year.
You think it's this year?
I think it's this year.
Probably.
You know, but before we got the new iPad Pro, I would have told you, nope, you're wrong.
Right.
But
yeah.
I'm with you now.
Yeah.
USB-C on the iPhone in 2019.
I'm ready for it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's not what I was expecting, but okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Here's the more controversial thing. Are they going to ever let you use external storage devices over USB-C on an iPad or an iPhone?
Yes. I think...
Like, why? We have a freaking Files app, but why can't we do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Why can't we do that?
That's definitely... That's got to be coming in iOS 13.
Right. Can we just give up that ghost? Like... It's lockdown. I'm fine if it only works with the Files app and you have to suck stuff in that way and then move it around in some convoluted way. Okay, fine. I'll accept it. But let's just have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe that's the compromise we have to make to get that feature and maintain whatever level of security Apple feels is appropriate.
Right. Yeah. Lock it down, but let's just let people do it. Especially now that you have, you know, 1 terabyte options on iPads, like, and you're marketing iPad Pros to professional people who maybe want to do those sorts of things and edit video. And like, if you really want it to become a alternative to a notebook or a laptop, it's probably time.
Yeah, it's definitely time.
pastime, really, for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It needs, I think Apple understands
I personally don't need it. It's not something that's ever bothered me, but I totally understand when I get emails from people, they're like, why can't I do this? And I have no good answer for them anymore. I can't like point to anything. It's like, yep, you're right. That's just messed up.
I think it's on the way. I honestly do. I think Apple understands that. I think that they've done a great job of positioning iOS on the iPad so that it can do a lot of these heftier workflows. I've seen plenty of videos of people doing complex things on the iPad, doing video editing and that sort of thing. I know Jeff does it. It's time. Mm-hmm. And I think that Apple sees that. I think they're okay with it. They just needed to get it. They just need to do it in a way that they're comfortable with, but it's not something that it is unacceptable for the technology to fight you on that front.
Right. Yep. I mean, especially now that, and again, with USB-C, it seems the right time too, because USB external hard drive, USB port on the iPad, boom, boom, done.
Yeah. And that's just another way to get USB-C, wide USB-C adoption, which is great for everybody.
Yep. I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
Yeah. What else do we have here? AirPower. Looks like Stephen Trotton Smith. He has heard that they've finally fixed it.
Oh.
Okay, damn. Great.
He says
no one cares anymore.
Overheating was a possible. I want it, man.
We've all moved on.
I want it. I haven't moved on.
I have totally moved on. I ended up with the thing from Nomad.
Yeah.
Where I can charge my iPhone and my Apple Watch at the same time. And when the AirPods case comes out, I can rotate my iPhone 90 degrees. And now there's a spot for my AirPods as well.
Oh, Nomad has a tri power?
Yes.
What is this thing called?
Hold on. I'll look it up for you real quick.
But it's got separate plugs, right?
No. It's one single USB thing.
Nice.
And it's, come on. Google's letting me down right now. Power. Charging hubs. It's the Nomad base station. But there's one that's specifically for Apple Watch.
Okay, we'll come back to it.
So base station Apple Watch edition. It's $120. It's sold out. It looks really nice. The charger puck for your Apple Watch is built in, and it holds it up at an angle so you can do the nightstand thing with it, and it looks really nice. I should be doing this as my pick this week.
You should.
Okay.
Anyhow, I've got this. It's $119.
But you need you need to throw your Apple Watch puck.
No, it's built in.
Oh, it comes with the puck.
Yeah, you take it out of the box, plug in the power cord that it comes with, and you're done.
Heck yeah! Whoa, 7.5 watts.
Looks, sure, it'll do three. Oh yeah, it has three charging coils. Look at that.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay, cool. Well, it's $120.
It looks better than Apple's.
It does.
It's pretty nice. Yeah, it's not a weird pillow thing.
Yeah, it's really nice. I'm really happy with
on there.
Man.
Pseudo leather.
I might need that. So that's going to be your pick, right?
I had something else for my pick, so I feel like I should do the other thing, and maybe this is like a bonus pick.
Okay.
It's a pre-pick.
Pre-pick. Okay, cool. Yeah, so, but I guess they finally fixed it.
I might be buying this right now.
Overheating.
Can I pre-order it? What's going on? How do I get on back order?
How do I get it? Give it to me. Take my money. Okay, so that's cool. AirPower might come out. And then that'll mean that we'll finally probably get the wireless charging case for the AirPods.
Yeah, and then I'll use it with my Nomad base station Apple Watch edition.
That'll be so nice. That'll be the time I get my new phone so I can inductively charge, because I do need to it's such a situation plugging all this crap in.
Do I have to is this the point in the show where I admit like my wrongness about poo-pooing wireless charging?
Sure, you don't have to, but it sounds like you want to.
It'll be cathartic.
Yeah. I mean, people who listen to the show know that I never got it until, and I probably, maybe I admitted it when I had my 10, but even more so now with the 11, like I'm so used to it now. Like when I don't have wireless charging, I get a little bit frustrated.
Well, cranky.
So I prefer it, even though it's like slower, you know, and I could plug in and it could be faster, but it's so convenient. Like I said earlier, I just have started to get little, and here's the thing. This is why air power doesn't excite me, because I can get really inexpensive. And again, I don't get the fast charging ones because those are more expensive, but you can get like $10 to $20 like chargers. I just use the little Anker basic one and buy a bunch of them and stick them all different places. And then wherever I'm at, I can just plunk down my phone and I'm charging.
So not too bad.
Yep. It's that level of convenience. It's just like bloop, bloop. All right. I get it now. I totally understand it. Not that I couldn't have, well, I could have had cords everywhere, but I think what sold me on it is that you don't have a like a little dongle cord sticking up everywhere that you're just plugging into.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I have a couple of those
thing that's sitting on the table that you just drop it on.
I have a couple of those wall outlets with the USB ports in them.
Yep.
And yeah, I don't really like the cords just hanging around.
You either have to leave a cord dangling, or you're not going to have a cord on you. So, you know, the point is like you could plug that wireless charger and just have it sitting on the table, the nightstand or the desk or whatever, the side table.
Yeah.
And it's just there to use. I guess you could have had docking stations too. I just never did the dock station thing. Maybe that was the
problem. Neither did I. But the wireless charging, I mean, I've got the Nomad thing by the bed. I've got, what's this one? A PowerBot thing, which is like $13 on Amazon. Right. Sits on my desk. And the only time I plug a cord into my iPhone is if I need to charge in the car. So maybe I just need to get a wireless charger for the car too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is fun. We're buying things. Last thing, Zero Sign-On has finally launched for Charter. I think Charter was the only company that decided to do that for the Apple TV, right? They were the first ones and only ones still?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad that I don't have service through them, I guess. I have internet through
them. Up until this point, Zero Sign-On meant no company was actually signing on with Apple for that.
Yeah, I thought it was cool I downloaded the app and I opened it and it said you don't have a TV service. And I said,
yeah, different than single sign-on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, most companies still don't even do single sign-on, do they?
Comcast doesn't do that?
Who has cable? Let me ask you this.
Lots of people.
F those guys, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't had cable in I don't know how long.
Tons of people have cable. It's still a thing, as it turns out.
I don't remember when I had cable. I have cable for internet. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad it works.
So basically, we just totally bagged on Zero Sign-On.
Well, okay, so Zero Sign-On for...
You don't need it if you don't have cable. Just dump your cable, people.
Yeah, but how are you? There are certain things that you can't get unless you...
What? Name one.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're right. Never mind. No, you're right. But you get...
I got, you know, people often say sports, but I mean, all of the sports, major sports things, and even some of the minor ones now have services like college football. I know they have an app for that and a service for that. I got free MLB on a T-Mobile Tuesday, so full access to that. I didn't even want it. I gave it to my father-in-law, who is a huge baseball fan, and he has my old Apple TV, and it was like the best thing ever.
Oh yeah, I always use that.
So nice. And you can see way more stuff. Like you're like, I think the experience is even better. Like if I was a sports fan, I think I'd prefer to get it direct and then go through the TV people. But maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. Like I have not missed a single thing one day. And ultimately I think you end up paying either the same or less. I'm not saying you're going to save money by cutting the cord, depending upon what kinds of things you watch.
Yeah, you may not,
but
at all.
But you get a lot more control. Like, it feels like to me, like, just such a better experience. And you don't have to deal with the cable company.
True. But
so, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm happy to be proven wrong. Everybody email in who has cable and defend it. I would love to hear what I'm missing.
If you're mooching off your parents and their cable subscription, it's very nice to have.
Okay.
Now, see, that's a very economical way to do it.
Mm-hmm. That's different, though. I'm with you there. If you're not paying for it, great. But if you're paying for it, I don't see where the experience is any better than, you know, and now that you can get, like, there's like Google TV and, you know, there's even some of the pure, like, non-cable streaming things that you can buy. AT&T's Direct TV thing, which is still, I don't know, that's like dealing with the cable company still. I wouldn't do that. But
yeah, my parents have that. It's weird. It's really weird and they hate it. It's confusing
Sling,
to them.
Sling does a thing, right? I don't know. But I don't even think you need those. Like between... So right now I have HBO, Amazon Prime, which doesn't cost me anything, Netflix, which is being paid for by my T-Mobile subscription, and then I just added the $12 for the first year Hulu. And between all those things, I have more shows and TV than I can ever possibly watch ever.
It's great, isn't it?
It is awesome.
All told, out of pocket, I am paying $15 a month for HBO and $1 a month, so $16 a month.
In total, for all of your entertainment.
That's a pretty good deal.
For all of that stuff.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, and if you're using Prime like I do, where I have Prime because I buy stuff.
Exactly. I'm not using Prime for the video stuff. It's just a bonus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. And again, T-Mobile, yes, I'm paying my T-Mobile bill, but I would have had to pay that anyway.
Yeah, but I think you're probably paying, well, you have a family plan, so you may be paying a reasonable amount.
I pay so I'm probably paying more like $21 a month. I think I do have to pay the difference between they pay $10 of the $15 a month Netflix bill or whatever it is.
Okay.
Still, you're getting a pretty good deal on your television entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Massive deal. And then I just supplement with, you know, occasional iTunes movie rentals or purchases here and there. So I'm probably, you know, again, if I'm being really honest, maybe I'm up to $30 a month, $40 a month for all of my entertainment.
That's probably cheaper than cable.
I think so.
Yeah, if you have premium channels like HBO, you're paying less the way you're doing it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, let's wrap it up and get to our picks.
Cool.
So, Jeff, what do you got?
Well, you've already heard my pre-pick, the Nomad Base Station Apple Watch Edition. My pick that I actually had planned, it's a new app that came out just a few days ago for iPhone and iPad, and it's called Capsicum.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's a personal organization, personal activity tracking app. So you have your calendar in here, you have your to-dos, you can keep like a little diary in there, and it tracks what you do, and it helps you find the trends in what you're doing. So, you know, so maybe if you're trying to figure out where the big time suck is in your life, this will probably help you find that. So it's a personal management app, but it comes in from a different angle than typical calendar and to-do apps. And it's designed to help you manage your time better, make your life better, and keep track of your habits. And you can set up like multiple notebooks in it. It's been around just long enough that I don't know all the features yet. But like the things that you need to do on a regular basis, Let's say you have some medicine you need to take every day or every week. Put that in there, and it helps keep track of all those habits. So if you want to develop a new habit, this will help with that as well. It's a really cool little app, and it's free to download, and you can use all the features. It's for like 2 weeks, and then to have full access to the service where you can do like everything. You can set up different notebooks for different aspects of what you're doing in your life. So if you sign up for a subscription, it's $20 a year, then you get access to all of that stuff all the time.
Interesting.
It's a pretty
simple. From Ish.
Yeah, and Ish is so cool. He's one of the people that when I met him the first time at WWDC, I just thought, you know, it's reason enough to go to WWDC just to meet him and other people like him.
Yeah, great developers.
He's that cool.
In our community.
He's pretty awesome.
I got to be on the beta. I was on the beta for this and playing around with it and watched it develop. It's really pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool. So you've used it more than I have, because I didn't have a chance to look at this until it rolled out this last week.
Yep.
That's awesome.
It kind of has a little, I always felt like it kind of had a little bit of a journaling, you know, life tracking feel to it, planning. I mean, it kind of handles all that stuff. So,
you know, the one thing that I would love for it to do that it doesn't, but come on, it's only a couple days old. I would love to be able to link it, the to-do part, to my task list in OmniFocus.
Yeah, I was going to say, how does this compare to OmniFocus? Because the app for crazy people
different,
like us.
It's a totally different approach. It's a totally different kind of thing.
Yeah, and honestly, as I was saying that, I realized that's probably not a good fit because of the way that OmniFocus is set up for managing your tasks. It would probably be more appropriate to say it would be cool if I could link this to things.
I use a combination of OmniFocus and Reminders.
Okay. And since I'm using OmniFocus all the time, the tasks that I've set up in Capsicum, I haven't bothered to look and see if they're showing up in Apple's Reminders. So I have no idea if those are linked.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the Capsicum thing is feels like more like personal planning, life goals, things that you want to do better at. You know, whereas I always have felt like OmniFocus for me is more of, and not that you couldn't use this for that, but more almost like a business tracking professional tool.
Yeah, I'll agree with you on that.
You know, I think this one's made for more people. And that's where I think, because you have the notes and stuff like in there, it's more like about developing daily good habits and plans and things around your life. And again, I think it's just a different approach. And I think it depends on the style of person you are and the sort of way you want to or like to do things, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that one's a replacement for the other or vice versa.
No, I don't think they're replacements for each other. It's just the way that I manage my tasks. It would be cumbersome to have to essentially double enter some things to keep track of them.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But I mean, this is awesome. I'm really pleased with this app so far. And at the end of my 14-day trial, there's a pretty good chance that I'm going to drop my $20 for a year of it.
Yeah. It's interesting that I was just looking at the app store description and I didn't see this before, but it says it's inspired by physical planners, like day planners, you know? So if you're the type of person that would normally use like a little day planner calendar thing like we used to have back in the day.
Yep.
Then that's exactly sort of what it sort of replicates.
Okay. I can totally see that now that you say it. It feels a lot. I was a hardcore day timer user.
Yeah, exactly. The day timers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, totally.
I lived and died by my day timer.
What is that?
It's a specific brand of paper-based calendaring and task management.
Huh. Yeah, and you had different sections and different tabs, which are like kind of like the different notebooks. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Adam, what's your pick?
Okay, my pick is a USB-C accessory. Now that we talked about, you know, everything going USB-C, including our iPads, from OWC. It is their USB-C travel dock. And what's great about it is it'll work with your iPad. It'll work with your Mac. It is 3 by 3 inches. It's like a little puck. And you can plug it in. And so it's highly portable. It's something you can throw in your notebook bag or the bag with your iPad Pro. It's got styling and colors to match your devices. So, you know, space gray and silver and all that fun stuff.
This is really cool.
What is this? I missed it.
Huh?
What did you say this is?
It's the OWC USB-C travel dock. So you plug it into your USB-C port, and what you get for that is you get 2 USB 3 Type A ports.
Ah, okay.
You get an HDMI connector, you get a pass-through USB-C, and you get an SD card.
Hmm.
And what's really crazy is the pricing on this thing. So I got to remember, I should have brought it up.
I just looked it up. $39.
$39. Bucks. So compared to Apple's $79 adapter that gives you pass-through USB-C, HDMI, and one USB 3 USB-A port, which is $79, this thing, it's larger, obviously, not by a ton, and you get the SD card slot plus an additional USB-C port, or USB 3 port, excuse me.
USB-A, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice, but it only does 60 watt power delivery.
Yeah, it only does 60 watt power delivery, but I'm pretty sure.
Well, if you're using this with Apple's, an iPad, that's more
I don't
than
remember
enough.
What Apple's does. But anyway,
Apple's,
it's nice
Apple's
you,
doesn't do even that, I think.
Right, exactly.
Oh, that's so, right, I forgot. But we've had this rant before.
We have.
Now I remember.
Yeah.
So this is a good product. It's a great deal, and you know it is a little bit larger. I'm not going to say it's, you know, if you're just using it with just an iPad, you know, it's maybe more a little more cumbersome than Apple's one. But again, depending upon your needs, again, it'd be greater if we could connect USB devices to it as storage devices. Obviously, you can't on an iPad, but again, it works with your Mac and your iPad. So if you have both with USB-C connectors and you just need some extra ports and an SD card slot and all that fun stuff with something that you can take with you that doesn't have to sit on your desk, this thing is freaking awesome. And it's a great price.
It's
so
really
throw it in your
cool.
bag and
wow.
just have it.
I found it. I'm going to like, how much did you say this thing was?
39.
39? Okay. So this isn't really as much of a counter slam as I thought it would be. But so this kind of fluctuates in price by about 10 bucks, but there's a mono price similar dongle for 59 that has 100 watt power delivery. It's got the 2 USB-A's. It has SD card, the I don't know what the micro size is and the standard size. An additional USB-C, USB port, VGA, HDMI. It's pretty nice. I'll throw this in the show notes too, just for funsies.
And it's portable?
Oh, it's very portable. I think I showed this one to Jeff.
Monoprice is...
Yes, you did.
I love Monoprice stuff, too.
It has a little wraparound. The cable tucks into itself, so it's super portable.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. You know, just because I have to be a punk ass about this, about these things. I'm still looking for the perfect dongle.
That gives you... This does give you a little more connectivity, especially when it comes to monitors.
Right. Yeah, it's not bad.
Oh, and it has is that a network? It has a Ethernet connector on it, too?
Yeah, it has Ethernet on it.
That's pretty nice. I just can't speak to that one because I don't have one, but I do have the OWC.
Yeah, I don't have one either.
And for disclosure, they sent it to me for review. So, but I would recommend it otherwise.
Sellout, Adam. Okay, so my pick this week is the EverDrive 64. And if you don't know what this is, imagine a Nintendo 64 cartridge with an SD card slot at the top, where you can plug in an SD card that has, let's say, every Nintendo 64 game ever on it. And so you just kind of, you turn it on, you have a little menu, you click through and say, oh, I want to play GoldenEye now. And then
wait, what is this thing?
It's called the EverDrive 64. It is a Nintendo 64 cartridge that lets you plug in an SD card that has whatever games on it that you want. So it'll load.
How do those games get on the SD card?
You put them on there.
From where?
You load them from the cartridges that you have using one of those transfer things that you definitely have, and not by downloading going to the Pirate Bay and searching for a Nintendo 64 ROM pack that has.
You're not downloading ROMs. Transferring them.
There's like 275. You wouldn't be doing
this. So this is a convenience product. It's just so you don't have to like have all the cartridges lying around.
Or in my case, in my situation where my brother has held my N64 and cartridges hostage in Arizona, and I want to play Zelda.
But gotcha.
It's an incredible, it's an incredible product. It's really cool. So the one I got the version 3, there's like version 2, which is like 107 for the version 2.5 and then 175 for the version 3. The primary advantage with the more expensive one is when you save on the older one or the cheaper one, if you save in the game and it saves to a cartridge, to the game cartridge itself, you have to hit the reset button on the N64 before it will actually save to the SD card. So there's like an extra step, which is not as, you know, convenient or nice as I would want. There's also a real-time clock, which works for like Pokemon Stadium and a few other games. With the 3, it works just like an original cartridge. You hit save, it's saved, it's magical, it's beautiful. It's an incredible product. I love this thing.
Wait, so let me get this. It's $175. Mm-hmm. There's no games on it, though.
No games.
Okay.
You get an SD card. You put every game on there.
Legally, by transferring it from your other,
yeah, quote unquote cartridges. Legally, yeah. And it's incredible.
That's awesome.
It's really cool. And I got it. So my advice, if like 175 is just not going to do it for you, and you don't want to pay the 107, I got it on Black Friday. So they only have one sale every year, and it's on Black Friday, and it was like 30% off or something. So, you know, it was worth it to me at that point. And I'm very excited about it. What else about it? I don't know. It's really cool. You can also do NES on there. You can do ROM hacks. And they sell them for other game consoles as well. Game Boy, Sega Genesis, that sort of thing. Oh, it came from the Ukraine.
Ah.
That was interesting. It took a long time.
As one might imagine.
Yeah.
It would.
It's really fun. That N64, Adam, that you gave me is being played a lot now.
Cool.
Yeah.
Glad you're enjoying it.
Okay. So with that, you can find our iPhone picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes. Tell a friend. Give us some stars. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your questions, comments, and feedback. Our sponsor this week was SimpliSafe Home Security. Check them out at simplisafe.com/TIOSS. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Jeff Gamet is at Smile Software. He's at JGamet on Twitter. And thank you, sir, for being here.
It's always awesome to get to hang out with both of you.
Yeah, and we should be back maybe a week or two from now. We'll have, you know, some shows coming up soon. So that's something to look forward to.
Cool.
You can find me on Twitter at Michael Johnson if you want to tweet at me some stuff or whatever. But yeah, with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show. An iPod.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? They have to get them.